Hello. It's Hello. That time of the week. Got some new faces as our host. This is the reunion tour, right, Nick? Because it has been a hot minute since you and I have been back together in the co-host chairs. But welcome to the Watson Weekend, you guys. I'm your host, it's Jessica Lasuski.
And I am Nick Kaplan, back in action with you, Jess.
That's right. It feels like home. It feels like a coming home tour. But yes, we are your weekly dose of medicine with just enough sugar to make it go down a little bit easier. We're the place that you go to every week for news on the world of retail, tech, e-commerce, supply chain, tariff. What don't we cover, Nick? We've got a lot going on.
If it's commerce, SaaS, we cover it all. But
yeah. But we're not professionals.
No.
Right?
No. I mean, I feel like every week we get a little bit closer. And I certainly am far behind you guys, but the emphatic no.
Yeah.
But we do have a wonderful sponsor that does believe in us in the show, and we believe in them. And because traditional commerce is just code for like not growing, it's time to do better than the status quo. So there are 450 plus retailers who are scaling 6x faster with AI, automation, and a platform built for what's next, which is very important
and
in line with the show. Marketplace, dropship, and retail media at enterprise grade scale, which is important. It's time to accelerate with Miracle. So thank you, Miracle, for sponsoring us. It is a great product, and we loved having them as our partner.
Absolutely. And we are a live show. So while you've got, again,
you
the best co-host, we are minus Rick Watson. We've got Nick in the seat. We're a live show. Please comment. We have so much to cover today. We're really excited to talk to you about, there's lots of news happening in the world of retail. It's literally never stopping, which is pretty interesting. But then we're going to also talk about why it's important in this time where you might be cost cutting. We know you've got fiscal responsibility, you're analyzing budgets, you still have to invest in yourself and invest in networking. And so we're going to talk about the Lead Summit coming up and why that one should be on your bingo card, especially if you're a brand. So before we hit it, we're going to get into the headline hangover, which is brought to us by Passport. And Nick, why don't you, we'll roll the clip and then we'll get started.
The headline hangover. So we're going to start with one of my favorite companies and products to talk about, Klarna. So I have been a huge fan of Klarna for a while, watching them go from BNPL to really, in my opinion, being like a super affiliate.
Yeah.
And they were really, really, really bullish on AI and did a huge layoff around AI. And we're very vocal about its impact in the workplace. And, spoiler alert, they're rethinking that strategy.
Walk it back.
Yeah, they are definitely walking it back. And, I think it's a really interesting moment, right? There was a speech given at Klarna headquarters, which is in Stockholm. And, I think that it's almost like an overreact. I am curious to hear what you think, but before that, I'll say there's an amazing company out there. It's young and it's solving a really big problem. And in my network is a very credible private equity / venture capitalist. And I reached out to him and I said, hey, you guys should check this out. And he's like, we are only looking at AI right now. So I think that this is kind of emblematic of like the world, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's like you said, this was kind of the HR statement around the world, if you will, right? When they first announced, we're cutting our workforce, we're going all in on AI. It's permeated in every part of the organization. We're actually not going to hire more people because of AI. And we are at the forefront of companies doing this right. So it was interesting to see the walk back. And yes, it was tailored around customer service specifically. But it kind of, I guess, begs the question of, have we gone too far with this whole AI statement that it's going to like coming for every single job, especially when a company like Klarna is saying, hey, we do have a customer service problem and we can't have our quality of work being impacted because we're all in on AI and we're not going to have people in seats to actually talk to our customers. Is that really the message here?
Yeah, I think it is. And I've been saying for a while, you know, what AI is the ability on some level, this is not, it's a little bit of a blanket statement, but it's just like supercomputing power. It takes many, many angles. It can compute complex equations and it does so with just like ferocity, right? It's like fast. And so I do think that to be able to get where's my order, to be able to understand past behaviors as future predictions, that's all great. But when you're dealing with a product like Klarna, where an unspoken but large part of their revenue stream is the penalties that come with late payments, and there is a high degree of subjectivity, like AI can't solve for all of that. There is going to need to be some human decision making. So
that's right. And if you have a panicked customer at the end of that, and they're trying to get through to someone, you know,
of a retailer. That's your brand, right? So it's like not even your customer, right? So
That's right.
But I thought you said something really interesting, right? Before we go on to the next topic, which is you said they were doing it, like they were one of the first ones to do it right. And I would say they were one of the first ones to do it.
Sure.
And, you know, I think that like it's going to be really interesting to see. I think, you know, not for this week's headline hangover, but next week, maybe OpenAI came out today with something called, I think it's called Code AI, that like essentially targets to be the coder of the future. So I think this is a really interesting topic to watch, which is like really when does AI stop and when does human kind of management start?
Right, absolutely. And that will always be the interesting needle to thread, if you will, of what companies do and where and how it works. So in also evolving business models, maybe a company that didn't embrace change as much as fast as they should, Weight Watchers has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And it is its clinical business segment. It's not the entire company. But it does affect the part of the company that it acquired through its telehealth subsidiary. I think it's been tough for Weight Watchers for a while, right? They had this legacy business model that was all about creating plans and point systems, when the world has really moved on to protein shakes and powders and pills, and now you have GLP-1 drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy that really have kind of changed the game in terms of how Americans or just the world at this point views weight loss. So they've had membership declines. Oprah last year pulled out of their board. When Oprah leaves, that's kind of, it becomes dark days. And really the story here is the company does have a ton of debt, and that's like a boat anchor around your neck, right? When you have $240 million in debt, it's really tough to claw out of that. So what's your take on this one, Nick?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. People sort of start talking about the Ozempic effect. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost like half kiddingly, but it's real. And I don't think it's going to stop at Weight Watchers. I think there's a lot to unpack in here with a broken business model and with a lot of real estate and not a lot of cash in the balance sheet. The inability to turn it around shows. And then what ends up happening is more private equity comes in. But what a lot of people don't talk about is the private equity people put in like a part of the capital, and then they go out to the credit markets and they find that capital and they put that capital on the company's balance sheet and its debt. Right. And so I think we just had a perfect storm of probably a bad business model completely disrupted by the internet. I mean, why in the world would you not just go to ChatGPT today, but a few years ago, just go to Google and say, what is the best way for me to achieve my goals of X and get it for free, the most powerful word in the English language?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's interesting. And I think that it's for people to understand about what subscription services and memberships are like and how you keep people, how you think ahead and disrupt your business model, but how when you do private equity, no matter if it's like prime private equity or distressed private equity, it's all a dance with the devil. And oftentimes this is the outcome.
That's right. Especially if you throw in some acquisitions on top of that, you've got a nice little formula for you're digging out of a hole.
Well, speaking of holes, right? I mean, this is where I'm always so happy to be with you, Jess. I feel like we're simpatico. But I think there was a super, super, super interesting transaction met with some mixed feelings yesterday when it was announced that one of the premier, I think actually it could be even argued from a point of view, the premier retailer at the moment, acquires Foot Locker for $2.4 billion.
Yes.
$24 a share. And I think there were a lot of people like, wow, this is a deal that makes sense. And if you read the press release, the executive chair talked about their consultation with Nike before making the deal. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to unpack in there as to what this means. But then a lot of the financial markets are like, wait, why is a really amazing retailer taking on a troubled retailer like Foot Locker? And Foot Locker is in, I think, 20 or 21 countries. Mm-hmm. It now puts the Dick's total footprint at over 3,000 locations, which is a really big number. I think the revenue is over $20 billion. And I think this is a story of leverage. I think they're saying that the businesses will run independent of one another. But I think oftentimes, whether you're like a single store that's buying your competitor or you're a conglomerate, a giant retailer that's taking on an additional asset, you need to think about leverage points. And so I don't really see this as a bad thing. I think Dick's knows how to operate. I think that Nike is looking with its new leadership, right? Elliott is trying to drive to better distribution. And all of a sudden, you now have this like conglomerate of 3,000 plus stores that are going to be able to sell all these sneaker brands, lean into the vendors. So I like it. I think it's great. What do you think?
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I do think it'll be interesting to see where some consolidation happens and what that means. But, you know, Foot Locker and Dick's Sporting Goods have had different footprints as well. Like Dick's Sporting Goods ends up being more in your like shopping center, shopping locations, where Foot Locker has traditionally been embedded in malls and in that format. And so what does that mean for them? And the other part is that, to your point, just control of the market. So they also have a large assortment. They have kids, they have Champs, they have, you know, a lot of different types of brands that reach different audiences, and how will Dick's leverage that? So it'll be pretty interesting to see what shakes out. And I don't really ever question Dick's, to be honest, because they seem to have it going on, and they've controlled inventory really well. So I'm sure they'll shore that up. And it'll just be, I think, a nice coming together of two brands that will leverage each other's assets. So
for sure,
I think it's a smart move.
Yeah, I think that it will be interesting to see how they combine loyalty and how they make it kind of worthwhile. But I do think that there's a lot that Foot Locker will benefit from a cost perspective, in terms of just probably getting some benefit, and it's just buys right away. But then on some of its private label brands, you know, the fabric purchases, the expertise, and the margin improvement, as well as most likely being able to go to the landlords, getting a little bit of a break. So I think it really is a win for everybody. And I agree with you. I really trust in Dick's. I think that what they've done, if you had said to me, you know, a few years ago, as they embarked on the strategy of more interactive retail, I know you, as a North Carolinian, have like a pretty big Dick's in your area.
Yes,
right. The kids go. I mean,
kids love it. It's actually like a place they ask to go to. So
what's interesting is they buy, right? Like, they don't just go to hit balls in like a cage, and they don't just go to like check it out. Like, it's the destination. Like, I'm going to where I'm going to go to Dick's.
Right. Right. Well, and especially with athleisure, and I'm sure, you know, you have girls, I have boy. So we have pretty much it's sports 24/7 in my house. And it's also the only clothes I can get my kids to wear. It's hard pressed to get them to get out of either sweatpants or some type of athletic wear. It's 24/7, and Dick's is the go-to place. So
I think that's a really interesting point. It'll be interesting to see if with Foot Locker, like, as I think it now about it in my head, there's this kind of like association with status and sneakers still. And I think that the unique nature of hard to get or, I don't know, just like really special. I wonder if Foot Locker becomes more, even more specialty retail versus sneaker, and becomes an outlet for those types of things more so.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that would be interesting to see, but I definitely think that it becomes different on like day one. I think it's a really excellent story. Happy to see a brand and a business that's very mall based for the retailers and the community and people that go there to stay alive. Right. And Dick's, I think, is going to knock it out of the park.
Yeah. And who said deals weren't going to get done in 2025? Pretty cool, right? Skechers, Foot Locker. We got some things happening.
I mean, but so, it's interesting, right? They're happening.
And
I think it's an interesting, you know, kind of topic overall that kind of continues to run through the show, which is like, this is a really, I would like to say unique, but I'll just say interesting and dynamic time. And I think Dick's has been talking about this for a long time, and they were like, you know what, this is the time to do this deal. So I do think that deals are getting done because the prices are right and the world needs it. And so people are capitalizing on it. So
that's right. Well, you talked about Dick's being a dominator in the retail space. We also had Wally World, as my mom calls it, aka Walmart, just put another stake in the ground of how much of a dominating force they are as they announce their earnings. Revenue was up 2.5% year over year in their fiscal Q1 26. From a U.S. comp perspective, the Walmart sales were up 4.5%. Sam's Club saw 6.7% increase. E-com globally up 22%. I mean, they just keep posting very high double-digit growth in e-commerce. And even in the U.S., the domestic market, it was up 21%. So that is, I think, a pretty far cry from, you know, maybe it was 15 years ago, Nick, when people were just really down on Walmart and they would never be able to be a formidable competitor to Amazon. And I think it's pretty interesting to see the fortitude to their strategy, especially with marketplaces, which grew 36%, really being the driving force of, hey, you know, don't count us out. Like we've got it going on. So it was pretty interesting to see how they just keep posting these wins time and time again, every single earnings, right?
Yes. I mean, they're also the best, right? I think if you want to talk about Dick's and what they've done, Walmart and what they've done, I was on the call with someone yesterday who's over in the Australia, New Zealand world. They mentioned Woolworths, right? Because that's still a thing in Australia, right? And it did make me think back. I mean, Walmart, I think people viewed as maybe a potential Kmart or Woolworth, right? As like what eventually might happen to it. But talk about like setting a course and sticking to it and really making all the right bets. And so there's an incredible grocery business. It's just incredible. So they have that to rely on. They're just in unparalleled in sourcing and supply chain and logistics. And so they have built this model of efficiency and continue to capitalize on it, making good bets. And they're asymmetric, right? So they're sort of like a test, learn, capitalize versus just betting. And I really am impressed with Doug McMillon, with the strategy that they have and their continued growth.
Yeah.
I found it interesting that they like hedged out in the,
they did,
in the call. What did you think about that?
Yeah. Look, I think that they are being cautious because even with the temporary reduction on tariffs for the pause for 90 days, they operate on very slim margins. And Rick and I talked about it back in, it feels like a blur, but was it March, February when these tariffs were initially announced and Walmart essentially went over to their Chinese suppliers and said, listen, you own this, not us. I don't know that those conversations really played out the way that they thought. And so they are going to have to absorb this, which means they're passing some of it on to consumers because of how slim their margins are. And they've been operating on everyday low price as the mantra since inception. So they just can't really continue to do that. And so when they start to signal, look, prices are going to go up, the market reacted and has concerns because people are going to tighten their wallets. And even in the earnings call that Walmart did for in February, they did allude to the fact that they're seeing people by the end of the month shorten up their spend on a weekly basis in groceries. They buy smaller packs, they, you know, choose to trade down, or they just eliminate items altogether. And you know, they watch those receipts like clockwork. So they have seen this change in spending behavior, and they know as they raise prices, it's going to have an impact on the overall, you know, wallet share, I guess, that they're ultimately able to capture, because it's just not there.
100%. But yeah. I do think, and that's an, I mean, there's a lot to unpack in that, but a place where AI does work is the analysis of the behaviors and trends of consumers mm-hmm. and what exactly that means. I think for all the brands and operators like listening to this, beware. Walmart's, you know, Walmart's sort of actions, though, is a, they're a bellwether for all of us.
Sure.
So I think that inventory kills, and what I think Walmart's doing is they're trying to essentially like message the everyday low prices to keep turns going. My sense is that, you know, unspoken, but they're trying to keep inventories in line to mitigate yep. risk and leave some top line on the table and turn faster. And that's why, you know, a lot of what Rick and I talk about when we're working with clients is GMROI, right? We are in a world where we can measure demand, which they do as well, if not better than anybody, and build supply. And so I don't know that they needed to be as cautious, but I think it was a responsible thing to do and something that the markets probably overreacted to, but that operators, right. brands, businesses need to really take notice of.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is, there's a question here from Miles. We think Dick's is going to help compete with Frasier's or JD in the UK. Is JD next for Dick's? What do you think, Nick?
Yes, I think it's probably not the, like, it's not why they did the deal, but I'm sure that as much diligence as they did, as long a time as it took, and as much as they involved Nike in it, I literally think Nike had a seat at the table. I think they probably had their For own sure. bankers. I mean, I think it was part of their, you know, their strategy, but I think that, yeah, they're looking to compete globally. Nike yeah. is full of problems. However, still, like, it's still the brand for the world, right? Like, it's not Golden Goose or On or like, it's Nike, and it's in every kid's house in one way, shape, or form. And so, yes, I have to think that they said, we can leverage this relationship, do incredible things, and put them internationally and kill everybody in every market that we can because we're better than them all.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, hey, thanks for hanging in with us. This is a bit of an extension on Headline Hangover, but there were some really meaty stories.
Chemistry.
Yeah, that's right. There's some meaty stories to get through, and we wanted to give them the fair shake that they deserve. So, you know, when we talk about pivoting to what we're going to cover a little bit more in depth today is you have said a lot, Nick, evolve or die in Kaplan's Corner. We've heard this pretty much be a steady drumbeat for you. One of the ways that people do evolve is they learn from their peers and they learn in networking. And the best places to do that are these events, but not everybody's got the wallet to go to all of them. And so how do you pick? Where do you go? Where do you spend time? We're going to talk about one today, the LEAD Summit. But before we get into that, Nick, you want to kind of highlight the tour and give us your take?
Yeah, it's a great topic. And by the way, it's not just here in Kaplan's Corner in work. I tell my kids evolve or die. So imagine, because we are also 24/7 sports. But I've known Noah for a while and Sonal. And, you know, I spoke, it's where I met Rick, actually. It was like a few years ago, he moderated a panel I was on. I think events are super important. And as we've kind of developed our partnership and you're doing so many different things together, we're going to do something at the LEAD, which is going to be, I think, pretty amazing because to your point about education and opportunities and really, you know, looking at learning from other people's mistakes or wins. So Rick and I have partnered and worked with Noah and Sonal at the lead, and I'm really excited for the audience to hear what they have to say in a minute, but we're going to be doing walking tours. And so I have not seen this done yet, and I think it's a pretty interesting opportunity for people. So what we do is we essentially work with brands solving their problems. And what we really look at is technology, which is what is the right investment to make? What's the return on that invested capital? How do you leverage that tool? Because it's not tools that save companies, it's people that save companies. So we're going to give a few walking tours in the space, literally like, you know, walking with people and talking about like, this is what's happening in CRM. This is happening in loyalty. This is what's happening in the front end. This is where you can opportunize and optimize your customer database. This is technology. This is, so it's going to be super cool. I'm a little biased, but I really do believe that having a third party, an independent person that's not you, to talk about the non-emotional right business decisions and where to make asymmetric bets, which I talk about all the time, is something that we're going to do. So I'm excited for it, and hopefully people will sign up and join us and make our first foray into education and a walking tour success. But with that, like, we can, I know if you were coming to New York, Jess, you'd dive right in on that.
100%.
Yeah. Our biggest fan.
That's right. Absolutely.
But Rick had a really interesting conversation with him.
Yeah. Let's roll it.
Cool. We take you back to early 2018.
Yeah.
Everlane was becoming the new Gap. Glossier was becoming the new L'Oreal. You know, Warby Parker was taking over LensCrafters and Pearle Vision, and this direct-to-consumer business model was really being perfected. So we said to ourselves, or I said to myself, at least this time, there's a gap here. There's a need here. Brands need to understand how to compete in this world and this shift.
What is it about this space, and are you targeting different slightly different community than these other events, or the content or the experience? Like, what's different? Like, how do you position yourself, you know, in the list of, you know, events that someone potentially could attend?
So Rick, there are events for retailers and there are no events for brands. So we really needed to have a conversation for everyone from, you know, again, like from Chanel to Clorox and in between. Uh-huh. And that's why the direct-to-consumer business model, while it's not what we focus on entirely today,
yeah,
it's where we started. So what's different? What's different is, first of all, we're big enough to be relevant, but small enough to still be boutique. We love lifestyle brands. Our focus is apparel, accessory, footwear, beauty, home, health and wellness, food and bev, CPG. We love looking at emerging brands. Right, the ones that are trying new things, charting new courses.
So we're a two-day show. We can't boil the ocean. So it's really curated and based on what have I heard in the last 6 months that everybody's talking about that we need to have a conversation on stage. And we put up, you know, people on stage that we think have something to share, interesting stories, interesting learnings that they have had in the last year or two that they can then share with the audience. So conversations that we're having this year, for instance, are, you know, in marketing, there's all these influencer marketing and content, but also this year we're putting up something on sports marketing, because that seems to be a lot of brands, even brands that were not traditionally doing sports marketing now getting into. There are lots of brands being built on TikTok, so we're having a conversation on that. We're also having the general conversations from these brands' perspective on how to use AI, what gimmick and what's value.
I will leave us with two things. One is the Lead Summit is kind of the flagship event that we do. It's the kind of the zenith of the apex of our year. But these two things back here, the Foremost 50 list and the Direct 60 list, is kind of the foundational research that we do that drives everything throughout the year. So check that out on thelead.co. And the other one I'll say is, and I'll kind of leave it with Sonal, we chose this year's theme as Destination Unknown.
Are you old enough to remember the missing persons?
Yeah.
Unknown, right?
Yeah.
You think he was thinking about that?
Yeah, no, maybe.
I don't think so.
No. Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, there's lots of different shows that exist. The lead has its own really point of view that they've shaken out on this brand experience. And the speakers are really impressive. And so, Nick, kind of what's your take on why go to the show? What are people going to get out of it?
So if I could go back in time, and we have the QR code for you guys to register now to get involved. I would have gone to these shows like far earlier on for a number of reasons, right? So this business is built around community. You know, I think the RMW brand has a large community. There are many communities out there, and you need to be part of them to learn and to get ahead, not just for the way you operate day to day, but for your own network. So I think just getting out and meeting people is important for your own brand. Equally as important is the content that these shows put on is not always the best, but pretty good. And I think that you have to be kind of discerning about who you want to see and what you want to learn. But like, there's so much rich content for you to just absorb. And here, like, I launched successfully on TikTok shops, or I was a direct-to-consumer business that had to pivot into Omni. There are people that talk about these experiences, and it just takes a couple of kind of like light bulb moments to really be like, oh. And so I think education is a big part of it. In addition, and while I don't see a ton of deals getting done at these shows, there is an opportunity, especially at a show like The Lead, that's a little bit smaller, for example, than like a Shop Talk or a CES, obviously. But there's the opportunity in these like smaller booths and formats to talk to people. So you can go up to the person at retention.com, which I did. And I'm like, I don't get it. How does this work? And they're like, oh, this is how it works. You really can fully understand versus like listening to people saying this is this or this is that, positive and negative. So I think that there's a lot to be gained from getting to the dinners or the events to meet people and just have fun, to build community and do that through physical contact, which I think is even more important in this world, and really get an education and hear from people firsthand what has been great and what has not been great, and then go out to those vendors on the 2 days on the floor and talk to them and make inform your own opinions.
Yeah.
So I like this show too, I'll say, because I mean, I do think that Noah and Sonal do an incredible job, put a lot into it. They do three events, not just this one. They do the Foremost 50 and the Direct 60, which are also super cool. And I've been to those to really get and learn about brands and up and coming and established. But it's New York City. And I think that it's a, while you're here, you can see some of the best retail in the world.
Right.
I mean, you've been to these shows before, and you have a far more illustrious career than I. So tell me, I mean, like, what have you gotten out of these shows over time? Have they been part of your like thing?
Yes, absolutely. I think I was fortunate enough because initially I started my career in B2B SaaS. So it really set the precedent of how important those shows were to build network, reconnect with people, as you said. And in this industry, as you know, the community in your network is so important. And what I've learned over the years is even your competition, you have a lot to learn from and gain insight. So I think that that's been really helpful. You know, you talk about community, being able to bounce ideas, just say, hey, we're in the trenches. Like, what are you experiencing? Are we having shared experiences? What are you seeing from consumer behavior? What are things that you all are doing that are different? And to your point on the vendor side, as I've moved over to more the brand retail, it is so interesting to be in one place and be able to connect and see all those different technologies versus if you had to have those conversations individually in your day-to-day life, like they probably wouldn't happen because you wouldn't have the time to like research or review them or reach out, book a Calendly, whatever, right? It's just so much easier to have that conversation one-on-one, because most of the time, full disclosure, and to all of you, you know, vendors out there, I do ignore your emails, and I'm sorry, but yeah, I've got about 100 others to churn through and maybe 100 other Slack messages. So it's just the reality of getting in touch that way is just not really conducive. So,
and I agree with the comment from Miles, right? I think as to what the purpose is, you know, for these shows. And I think that they serve different purposes. I think you go to Shop Talk, it's like drinking out of a fire hose. It is certainly the one show I would say that everybody should go to just because it's an epicenter, like everybody goes. It's Vegas, but the objective or the intention for me when I go to Shop Talk is to sort of, it's more just getting networked and like listening, right? Like the show is big. It's hard to like talk to vendors and have more of those type of conversations. I will say, like, an example for everyone listening is right before I left Shop Talk, I did a table talk, like me, I attended one. And from that, I was able to gain from the conversation. It was like six people that TikTok Shops is driving a ridiculous amount of traffic to Amazon, because people on TikTok Shops consume content, but want the trust and the speed of the purchase. Yeah. So like with a lot of different people I work with, that's been a seminal point, like 100% taken from that conversation.
Yeah.
The lead, I think, is more intimate. And I think you'll have an opportunity to sort of have those conversations one-on-one with vendors. You know, it's not like Target is competing with you for time at a booth, right? And I think that that's kind of what happens at Shop Talk. So
And I mean, I think that you guys have some pretty cool things happening in partnership with Passport, this tariff feud. So it's some kind of family feud game show.
I was invited to be part of that. I don't know, getting invited to things, but you know, full disclosure, right? Rick and I share, we have an office together. It's like, you know, he sits like over there. He's not here today, but there, Rick, I will say, goes like the full distance. Like, meaning when he gets into, like, one day he walked in here in like a full, like, bunny suit for Easter last year. And I'm like, what's happening? Yeah. So it should be a really fun event. There will be some good garb attire. And
no way.
I mean, it's Family Feud, but I encourage people, it is worth investing to go to these shows. It is so easy to cut the expense, so easy. But you have to invest in growth. You have to invest in education to be able to grow. And you want to minimize the downside risk of the bets you have to make.
Sure.
Like, in the best of times, you have to make bets. But in the worst of times, it's 20 times more important. So when you come to a show like this, you're like, you can, it's like almost therapy. It's like, hey, I'm really in trouble, or hey, I'm having a problem I need to solve. Guarantee you'll find someone that can actually help you answer that question, and you can be vulnerable and get help. It's like we're all together.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Well, this is a great place to wrap on the lead. Really appreciate Sonal, Noah to walk us through that. I have one more question for you, Nick, before we kind of head out for our weekend. You've been held hostage for a couple of weeks now. I'm just doing a wellness check. How are we feeling here?
Still held hostage.
Oh, no.
I had a, you know, maybe I'll get invited back next week for an official Kaplan's Corner. And,
of course
and
you will.
Held hostage. But yeah, I thought it would be better. I mean, I'm still not what to make of it. It's better for 90 days. But the kind of tough thing for people is, and I'd be curious to hear your take on this as well, like, what do you do? I mean, there's a 90-day reprieve. Great. So we're at 30%, not 145%. But like, you can't trade on that.
No, uncertainty is very difficult, right? And
we're a certain uncertain time.
I guess does this get you through a period where you have more confidence to place your orders for the fall, make sure you have what you need to stock the shelves for the holidays, although it still might be less, but not as drastically less. And I was actually listening to a podcast about the de minimis impact specifically in China and in the garment village and the district there, where Shein has basically been the driver of their volume for so long. And there are places that are either closing, the orders have already been reduced significantly, and factories looking at relocating to Vietnam or somewhere else. And so I think that's the other thing that you're dealing with, is this own disruption happening because of de minimis at the same time of the de minimis loophole being closed at the same time of the tariff situation. So it's a little interesting to watch. So,
yeah, so much unknown. And I think that Scott Bessent, I don't want to agree with him that there was we had enough goods to get us through holiday. I mean, there are clear bad things happening as a result of these tariffs to small businesses on both sides. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I will say that the de minimis thing is big. You know, I think that's not something we talk enough about just as an industry, the impact on Amazon sellers, the impact on consumers that are buying all that stuff. And I am I'm on the board of Goodwill New York and New Jersey, and it's
you see the Shein halls end up in the
it's yeah. crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it is crazy what happens to these products. So I'm happy about that, but I am still, to guess to answer your question, I'm still really uncertain, definitely held hostage, and strongly encourage people to be mindful of inventory. That's all I keep saying is inventory. You're better off missing sales than liquidating inventory. Because liquidating inventory and this type of environment and the cash that it ties up, it's death.
It's hard. It's
forget about your margins.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
margin and turn, my friend. Margin and turn.
Well, look, until then, you gotta find the happy places. And we're gonna do what we always do. We're going to dance it out and get excited.
This is my one happy place.
It is.
Only happy place I might have. Actually.
Little shoulder shake. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend.
We're dancing.
We're going to do it.